ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Podcast, and the curtain has come down on Gather Round, the fourth edition, 2026, and we have had a record crowd of 270,018 fans through the gates at Gather Round, but it is finito. Done. Ben Cameron here for ABC AFL Daily. No Daniel Harford today. We've got a far better former AFLW coach. I say that in jest. Carlton's inaugural AFLW captain, premiership winner as well at Brisbane, Lauren Arnell. Good to have you in, Loz.
Thank you, Benny. Look, I don't want to start on a sour note, but Harf is the one that moved me on from Carlton, so I'm sure he'll appreciate that reference.
So what this is revenge. You've moved him on from...
These are all your words. I'm quite happy. He did it. It was very kind. It was over a coffee, straight up, straight down the line, right in the middle of the eyes. See you later.
Wow. So he moved you on, but then you went to Brisbane and won a flag.
Yeah, look, no regrets. We're happy. So, we're good.
Thanks, Harf. Good on you. Gather Round, what are your immediate reflections on Gather Round 4.0?
Look, I've enjoyed it. I only worked the one game, and I feel like the atmosphere around the media centre is there's a lot of tired faces, Benny. Yeah. There's a lot of people that have done a lot of work over this period of time. But
a lot of it after hours, I get the sense as well.
It seems that way. Yeah. It seems that way. But no, as an Adelaide resident, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I think having everyone in footy in town for 4 or 5 days has been exceptional, and some of the footy has been pretty good despite the weather.
Mm. There's a big story out of Port Adelaide and St Kilda, the game you've just covered. We'll come back to that. But the five key points out of Gather Round, so fourth edition, which we've mentioned a few times now. But no deal is the big story. Usually, by the end of Gather Round, we have the news about a new deal, which is generally announced out of the Food and Wine Fest in Norwood. Nothing done as yet. So the South Australian government, headed by the charismatic Peter Malinauskas, they want a long-term deal, and they say they need a long-term deal to secure the investment that's required for the stadia around the place. This is what Andrew Dillon had to say on Offsiders earlier today.
Oh, look, we're having really good discussions with the Premier, but we have been saying we want to make sure we get to the right deal, not a quick deal. And there's a few complexities that we've got with our competition structure with Tassie coming in 2028. So we want to make sure that we've got sort of, what is it, the I's dotted and the T's crossed before we sign it away. But really good discussions. And South Australia, as they have done the previous 3 years, putting their best foot forward. Peter wants a bit of certainty so that he can invest. So like we saw out in the Barossa, and we'll be there today, you know, a big investment there, which has been great for Gather Round, but also an investment for local footy. So the local footy can play there in an incredible facility. And if we're going to continue to invest, he wants a bit of, you know, a bit of runway. So we're cognizant of that, but we also know that, you know, we're looking into a 19th team in 2028. And so it's just making sure that we know how the competition's going to work and make sure that we've got a Gather Round that works for everyone, because I think the best part about this week is that we've got all of the clubs here, all the supporters in the one spot.
How soon can we expect it?
As I said, I think, look, I don't want to put a timeline on it, but, you know, it won't be, it's not going to be months away, but no. We just wanted to get through this weekend, make sure that we cover off all the eventualities.
One of the other big storylines out of Gather Round this week was the weather. Last year we didn't get out of shorts. It was too hot. This week all it did was rain.
Look, it's been a significant challenge. And I can tell you as a resident here, it's been exceptional weather right up until this weekend. So a real shame for that. And even the Festival of Footy across the other side of the river here at Adelaide Oval. It was so hot last year, they were handing out free ice creams. Yeah. And this year it's been a bit of a mud pit and a little bit of a flattener. But look, I think despite that, record crowds, you can't argue with that. And I think people are just going to keep showing up for an event like this.
The venues is another interesting storyline out of Gather Round. So five games here at the Adelaide Oval. So Thursday night, Friday night, two on Saturday, and then one today as well. We had two in the Barossa, two at Norwood. The whispers are that McLaren Vale is the next area that they want to host a game. So similar to what we've seen in Mount Barker, now in the Barossa Valley as well. I wonder whether they could have a second ground with a little bit of part-time infrastructure over at Adelaide Uni to keep everything even more central, Loz.
Well, if I'm correct, Peter Malinauskas plays his local footy
he
just
does.
Down the river there. So, look, I wouldn't write it off immediately, but I do love the idea of McLaren Vale. I think getting out to the regional areas, the biggest sell, certainly for people here in South Australia, has been the tourism influx. But for me, as a PE teacher at heart, I love the idea that we can extend community facilities that will bring people here for AFL, but also mean that there's a long-term facility there for community sport that's at the absolute elite level for people here in South Australia. I think there's such appeal in that for everybody.
Oh, I totally agree. I don't want them to be white elephants. Like, apparently the Mount Barker ground barely gets used. I don't understand how that's the case. Surely we've got enough people playing footy that that ground can be used. The scheduling overall, I think everyone's pretty happy with the double headers, the game early on Saturday, and then the later game between Hawthorn and the Western Bulldogs seem to work well. The improvements. So these are the other whispers doing the rounds when you get down into the function rooms. I didn't do much of that this week. Last year, I had a very husky voice on Monday morning, Loz. But the whispers are that if they do have the Tasmanian team come into the competition and an uneven number, whether Adelaide could play a Thursday and then possibly a Monday.
Back it up, yeah.
So that every team can be involved. So Adelaide play twice and everyone else plays once. And then the other suggestion is around the AFLW component. So clearly the off-season at the moment, you are a former AFLW captain, coach, premiership winner. Do you think that an AFLW State of Origin game would add to gather round, and how would you like to see it executed?
I think if you ask any of the players in AFLW, and certainly the top tier of AFLW players now, they would demand involvement as a player, and they would almost do anything to be involved in a State of Origin game. One thing I will say is, where does that fit? And particularly if you have Tasmania coming in and a team like the Crows or Port Adelaide are doubling up in a gather-round week and playing twice. Mm. We've seen the VFL State League team play against SANFL State League teams, men's and women's, yesterday at the Bay. And that's happened 3 years in a row now, I believe.
Yep.
And it almost feels like you're sort of jamming it into the week. And so I do think if you're going to have an AFLW absolute top tier game, and it sounds like that's going to trend into an Ireland versus Australia game.
Yeah.
It would need to be at Adelaide Oval and it would need to be front and centre. Otherwise, I don't see the point in doing it.
Could you put it in the middle on Saturday? I mean, the AFLW games are shorter, so could you play the early game, play a middle game here? I know issues like the players like to warm up on the ground and we've got change rooms issues, but surely that can be overcome, and maybe you could make it a really big day at the Adelaide Oval on the Saturday.
Potentially. I do think three games in one day would stretch the rooms. Potentially, if I was involved in that, I'd love to see the first game of Gather Round as a doubleheader. We don't like the word curtain raiser.
Yep.
But if we can go doubleheader, if it's a Thursday night.
I didn't say curtain raiser, did I?
I don't think you did.
Okay, good.
I don't think you did.
Because I got some advice from Bob Murphy recently as well about...
You better listen.
Don't say babysitting when referring to your own kid.
Parenting.
He said, look, I'm just letting you know, I've made that mistake once before. Just say, look, I'll look after my own kid. I'm not babysitting.
Oh, don't start me on a parent side note on a footy podcast, Ben. It'll go too far. Look, I think if on first thoughts, AFLW, top tier game. Yes, it's the off season. Every single player that is involved should be more than fit right now. The preseason starts in a couple of weeks. I'd love to see it as a doubleheader on the first game of Gather Round.
Yeah, I think we'll leave that there for Gather Round. What an awesome weekend it was. 270,000 fans. That was a real buzz. Well done to everyone, given everything that's going on at the moment, to come across and take in Gather Round. The travelling fans, the local fans, just an outstanding atmosphere. The game you've just broadcast, Loz, Port Adelaide and St Kilda. Now, the most interesting part out of this match was undoubtedly the report of Zach Butters for abusive language by umpire Nick Foote. Now, the Port Adelaide players were huddled up. They're having a chat. Zach Butters seemingly says something in the direction of the umpire. You can clearly see Nick Foote run by, say, look, I'm not copping that, Zach. 50-metre penalty or a free kick, and he runs off. Now, Zach Butters spoke to Channel 7 post-game. This is what he had to say.
There was an incident in the third quarter where a 50-metre penalty was given against you. Umpire Nick Foote then said at the time that he was reporting you for language used towards him. What did you say to him, and how did that situation play out from your perspective?
Yeah, I'd love to know the language that I said, because I went up to him after the game and obviously just wanted to have a chat like any two humans do, and he said he didn't want to speak to me, and all I said is, how's that a free kick? And he gave 50 and said, I'm on report. So I had a few teammates there right next to me, Ollie Wine, so yeah, I'm curious to follow that one up because, yeah, I'm never going to say anything bad to the umpire. So, yeah, I just wanted to follow up and ask what he thought I said from his end. So
there are no expletives used or anything directed at him that could have been viewed as derogatory or anything?
No, generally no swear words, no any bad language. So that's why I was curious. And, yeah, obviously a bit frustrated because it leads to a goal. And I think I'm a pretty honest bloke out there and have a good relationship with most umpires. So I'm sure the club will deal with that.
Early to say, but if you were to be charged, you feel like you'd have a case to fight against that?
Oh, mate, I'd fight for the hills because, yeah, I know what I said and I know I didn't say anything bad.
So, Zach Butters, I know what I said and I didn't say anything bad.
Mm. I think the most important part of this is it seems that all of the AFL umpires are mic'd up.
Yeah.
And so this will be recorded.
It feels like there'll be audio of it.
And, Zach, you couldn't ask an individual to be any more firm on where they're at. He's clear on his position and no doubt whatever's been recorded in that interaction, whatever the umpire thinks he heard, that will come to fruition when it needs to.
Yeah. I really hope it is clear and audible on Nick Foote's mic because I don't want another and a very, very different situation and seemingly more serious situation with Lance Collard. We don't know what's been said here with Zach Butters yet. So, but I don't want a he said situation because how will we know when we get to that? I don't want to discount St Kilda's win either. A second win of the season for the Saints, critically important. I've been hard on St Kilda, but that was an important win for them. Late in the game when it was 8 points, they didn't look like scoring until the 50-metre penalty against Jason Horne-Francis, which drew Jack Silvani within goal-kicking range, and then Matheus Filippo from long distance. So they got out of there, St Kilda, with an important win.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here, I reckon you would have been behind me. I was standing up for most of the game. I was sure that Port Adelaide were going to win that game after that momentum. And things were just shifting on the ground and the crowd was up and going. But, yeah, I do think St Kilda deserve absolute credit for that one because they made sure the game was on their terms for all but that third quarter. And, yeah, I think the way that Port Adelaide allowed particularly Wilkie to play the game on his terms and be that spare for the whole night drove me a little bit bananas up here in the box.
Yeah.
But I think St Kilda outcoached and their effort was far better.
The wall of Wilkie just getting it done once again. North Adelaide's own coming home and performing very well at the Adelaide Oval. The overzealous arc was certainly something we saw throughout Gather Round and really I noticed this firstly on Thursday night, and it's just something that's crept into the game. A lot of intervention, particularly for the lasso free kick, last disposal out of bounds between the arcs, where there is a lot of checking with the arc. There is a lot of consultation between the field umpire, the two boundary umpires, that takes an awful lot of time. And I would just like to know the process of what happens there. Are they being told by the arc first, just wait until we can see this? Are they discussing it for 5 to 10 to 15 seconds, then the arc's telling them? Or is the arc not involved at all? Because I don't think we want really strong arc intervention right throughout the game like that, do we, Loz?
Well, I don't think that was the idea behind it, was it? It was more about let's speed up the game. Let's make sure that if there has been a last possession, which that's a whole other topic for me. I don't love it.
If you don't love it.
I like the idea that if you kick the ball cleanly and it's travelled a distance and it's been a terrible kick or whatever, it's gone out of bounds, I like that a team can then have clean possession and come back at you rather than a stoppage that takes forever. What I don't like is if it comes off your shin.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's a fumble and it's all of a sudden last possession instead of a stoppage. I think in those scenarios it should be a stoppage. But to your point, it does seem like they are buying time to try and get a decision on often the ones that are driving me bananas that I think should just be a stoppage. It's like if we're fumbling around and I don't think they can change the rule again this year.
No.
Maybe it's one for next year where it's always driven me nuts in AFLW as well. It's like if it's not a clean possession and it's not a kick that's actually travelled, maybe the 15-metre distance is the one that makes it clear for everybody.
Yep.
Then let's just throw it in.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that. Like I think if it's a really clear last disposal, sure. But I totally agree. Like the ones when it ricochets off a foot and grazes someone, spin it in, let's keep the ball moving. And that's the spirit and intention of the last disposal out of bounds rule, which is why they've brought it in. So yeah, but I'd just like a little bit of clarity as to when is the arc speaking to the umpires? And I think we deserve to find out because that Greg Swan said that that's not how it would be operating when he spoke to us at the start of the year, I thought.
So the challenge for you, is it the time that it's taking or is it that there's no human error?
I don't really mind the human error, but I agree with you. If it was adjudicated in the way you want it to be, I don't think we'd have an issue. I think it would be pretty clear. No undefeated teams remaining in the competition as of last night when Hawthorn took down the Western Bulldogs. So we've got 4-4-1 teams. Sydney, the Western Bulldogs, Fremantle and Hawthorn. It was a big win for Hawthorn, a statement win for them, really. How do you stack those top teams, 4-1?
Well, I wasn't expecting the Swans to be this good at this point of the year. So I think, like, well done. And I love seeing Brody Grundy dominate right now. He looks like he's put so much time into his body. He looks like he's deliberately dropped a lot of muscle and a lot of weight so that he can cover the ground and counteract the new ruck rules. So I really like the Swans, given, like, Goulden is a massive loss for them. And it's barely a hiccup for them. Angus Sheldrick's one who's been out. He'll come back soon.
They haven't even got Charlie Curnow up and going yet. Like, imagine
if he...
And
that will take time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is that? Just the connection in a new team?
Yeah, you've got a guy who plays ahead of the ball the entire game. And I think even we spoke about it tonight with St Kilda. You speak about guys like De Koning, who's in the contest majority of the game. Jack Silvani, I thought, played really well tonight. It takes time to get to know your new teammates and a new system and for your teammates to understand what you're going to do in different moments. And so I think especially for a forward and a tall forward like Charlie, it might take all year.
Hey, if he gets going second half of the year, they are a scary prospect. I think there's a really clear six best teams in the competition and they're in the top six at the moment.
Correct.
The Swans, the Dockers, the Hawks, the Dogs, the Suns and the Lions. I mean, the Lions' best might still be the best of the lot.
And let's not underestimate a Hugh McCluggage. I mentioned Goulden for Sydney, and they've covered that patch like it never happened. But I think McCluggage being out for the Lions since, opening round, that's a massive, such an important player for them. And I think sixth on the ladder is generous. I think they'll be significantly better than that the longer the season goes. But Freo sitting second on the ladder, I'd love to know your thoughts on that as a West Australian originally.
Yeah, I think something's going on at Fremantle with their ability to just find a way to win. So I thought it was just important that they won. Like Collingwood, Corbin put it at the beginning of the broadcast on Friday night that they're like a gatekeeper. Like they're not going to be probably one of the better sides in the competition this year with where they're at. But if you're a good side, you've got to beat them. Mm. And Fremantle, for a lot of the game, didn't look like beating them, but they found a way to do it like they did a week earlier against Adelaide. So they're just finding ways to win. And Tracy's mark was enormous.
In the wet.
In the wet. And I tweeted this on Friday night. I thought he had a really telling comment to Kath Lochnan post-game after, who did they play in the wet in Perth a fortnight earlier? It might have been Port Adelaide. Anyway, he said after the game, Kath said, your hands, your ability to just clunk them in the wet. And he said, I put a lot of work into it. We get the soap out, wet balls, and I spend a lot of time clunking them. So normally there's a bit of sort of false modesty there, but I love that he just explained, no.
I've done the work.
I put a lot of work into it, and success leaves clues.
It was an exceptional moment in a game that I don't think really lit anyone's fire.
No.
But I really enjoyed watching Freo execute in the moments that mattered. It was awesome.
I think Hawthorn are the highest IQ team in the competition.
I've got a confession.
What?
Jack Ginnivan's never been my favourite player, but this year I've loved watching every single time he's played. I don't know how much license he's been given, but it seems like often the players that are the bigger bodies, like Josh Tracy, throw him behind the ball when you really need to slow the game down or you need a spare. I've seen Ginnivan go back, go forward, go inside stoppage, and he just gets it done. And he had a couple of moments that weren't perfect the other night, but geez, I actually really enjoy his IQ, and his execution this year has been exceptional.
Oh, I think people look at Jack Ginnivan and they see a little bit of a rat bag, and they see the peroxide blonde hair, and I think they don't understand how much of a footy nuffy he is. Yeah. Like, he's a proper footy nuffy. He's incredibly smart, and of course he is, because he's not very big. He's not very athletic. So of course he's got a high footy IQ, because otherwise you don't succeed in the AFL if you don't have that, if you're not quick between the ears and you're not quick fleet of foot. So
and highly skilled too. And I'm sure we're going to talk about Nick Watson. Like, what a player. And also, what a disadvantage for the Doggies not having Tim English out there, because Hawthorn's rucks just popping it down Watson's throat at forward 50 stoppage when the game was really on the line. That was a really fun part of footy that I enjoyed watching this weekend.
I was wrong about the Wizard too. I wasn't certain you could take someone that diminutive.
He's high
in the draft. Is he?
He's my height.
They're so big now, though, these players.
168, 169 at best.
He's been incredible. So I think Sam Mitchell is absolutely getting the best out of that team. And I think he's a little bit of a chameleon, Sam, as well.
Or Mitchell.
Yeah, because Sam's a junkyard dog, street fighter from way back. Like, he's got mongrel in him, Sam, I reckon. Like, nasty, anything to win. And I say that with great admiration. And you see him in the rooms, and he's the sort of jovial, loving, get around the guys. And I think he knows that's what the young kids need.
Mm.
Oh, I think he's...
So he's adapted.
I think he's adapted a lot to get around them. I did the game between Essendon and Melbourne out here on Saturday, and I was actually in the Essendon rooms pre-game. Now, I'm in a lot of rooms post-game, never pre-game, but we went down there because Adam Ramanauskas was presenting the jumper to Sullivan Roby for his debut, number 9. And they were very bullish in the rooms, Essendon. They were confident. They thought it was the best team they'd had in about 18 months. And sure enough, they ended their 17-game, 11-month, 323-day losing streak in that game. And there were signs of life everywhere, Loz.
I think it's amazing. And I called... The last game I saw them was round 2 here against Port Adelaide, and my word, it was horrific. And I looked at the stats, and you look at guys, obviously Jordan Ridley's come back into the side. Archie Roberts has exploded in that game and found his spot. Sardis is back in the side. And Kyle Langford, who looked almost lifeless in round 2 here at Adelaide Oval, to see his output against the Ds, it's like... How can you bottle the energy that you've just spoken about and that belief in themselves when they're beating a team like Melbourne, who was coming out of last week with all guns blazing and maybe they're a lot better than we thought they were, squash the Ds, and then what's next and how do you bottle that feeling and that belief in what you have in front of you?
I think there's a few things to it. I mean, it looks like they've found one with Jacob Farrow. Beautiful long left leg on him. Archie Roberts had a career high 42 disposals. Sullivan Roby is thick and big. Like, these kids come in different
that.
Now, don't
yeah,
they?
Yep.
And, Peter Wright, I think starting in the ruck gets him involved. We spoke about that on the broadcast.
Yep.
So they looked like a different side. I mean, they've sorted out their team defense from whatever they were doing that game we called against Port that you mentioned.
Mm.
Like, it didn't exist.
There wasn't a lot happening. From what I can tell, there's a lot more pressure on the ball, which means your backs aren't deserted. Like, your Ben McKay, who gets torched in the media all the time, and could be making better decisions. But if there's more pressure on the footy, it gives him a lot more time to make better decisions in front of it.
Yeah, certainly. The other debate, which is just beginning to rage a little bit, I feel, is the rising star favourite. Who do you have? So the top three at the moment are Jagger Smith's the favourite at the moment, then Willem Dersma, and then Cooper Trembath has shot up to third. Started last year playing community football for Blackburn.
That's a cool story.
Could win the Rising Star a year later.
I'd love to see Cooper Trembath win it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the bloke's going to have to kick a lot of goals to get in that mix ahead of Dersma and Smith. And I know you love Willem Dersma. He's got an enormous amount of talent. He's a freak athlete, right? But for me, Jagger Smith, his story...
Yeah.
From what he's come from and the year that he had last year with an ACL return, I'd just love to see him kick the ball a little bit more. And I think if he did, that'll shake up Dersma. And Trembath, you mentioned, how many goals would he have to kick to be legitimately in the conversation with Smith and Dersma?
Probably 40 to 45, wouldn't he?
So that's going to be challenging in a forward line with Nick Larkey and Zerha alongside him and Paul Curtis.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty hard for him to bag 40 goals this year for North Melbourne.
Yeah, it probably is. Oh, I do like the Worm, though. He's very, very exciting. And more than anything, did you ever speak to Yasmin Dersma when you were at Carlton? You were at Carlton with Yas, weren't you?
Well, I met Willem when he was a very different teenager.
Just
when
a small
Yas was
worm.
At Yeah, fair.
Did you ever ask her about why her parents used X, W, Y, and Z for all of their names?
It's funny you say that. It must be a sporting family thing because Bree Conan, who's the captain at Brisbane Lions, her family is ABCD and her sister Cara is a current Diamond and has played an enormous amount of netball for Australia.
There you go.
So it must be a thing. Maybe if anyone's having multiple children, they need to think about the alphabet a little bit more. If that's what you want for your kids.
I started with an A, so I've just got to go to a B next. I like it. the earlier games today, so Geelong and West Coast, 8 lead changes in the first half. The Cats kicked 5 goals in the last 5 goals of the first half, all in time on to open up that game. So it was the largest crowd we've had at Norwood in an AFL game.
Geelong,
through
West
8
Coast.
Attempts. Yeah, that was the hardest game to get tickets to all week, apparently. So Holmes and Smith had 68 disposals between them, 34 each. So West Coast are improving, but a heavy defeat to Geelong in that game. And then I was out in the Barossa, Lindock, Barossa Park is the name of the ground. GWS defeated Richmond by 56 points. Stephen Canelio and Aaron Cabman both suffered concussions. Not good there. I've just had a little watch on Richmond. I know they're missing some of their senior players and it hurts a developing team, but they've lost to Carlton, who have been pretty sorry to start the season, and they've had nearly all of their other defeats by 10 goals. So I've just got a bit of a watch on Richmond. They're not going that well at the moment.
Not happy with their progress.
No, it's not so much that I think it's all predictable, but it is year three. So Uzo had a really bad first year. Then they won, I think, 5 games last year.
There was promise.
Yeah, there was almost like a group think in the media that this is the perfect rebuild. They dropped right down. They got all of these top picks, and now they're spiking quickly. It's not always linear. They've just regressed a little bit, so I don't think they're going as well as maybe everyone thought.
Yeah, and I think what I saw of that game was the first quarter, and I'm sitting at home watching that before I came out to Adelaide Oval for tonight's game, and it just looked like all Richmond needed was that quarter-time siren because the Giants were so dominant and Richmond just had no response and no answers to them. And Giants, when they're up and going, they are very, very hard to stop, which you've seen firsthand today. So, look, I think judge Richmond when we hit round 15, round 16, how many injuries have they had to those older players? And what's a guy like Sam Lawler doing? What's Seth Campbell doing? They've had another 10 games in them. What does that look like?
Jonty Fall, I think, finished up with 2 disposals and looked really frustrated all day. So he might need a little bit of time to just find some confidence and form probably in the VFL as well. So
maybe the comparison is Hawthorn though. They've taken years to put games into those guys. And I remember speaking to a couple of Hawthorn coaches 2 years ago at a sports conference early in the, late in the preseason, just before round one. And it was like this big shift that they recognized where all of those young guys were, to be fair, gifted games.
Yeah.
Let's put games into them. Let's prepare them to get to this point 2 years ago. And then it was like this big line in the sand where it was like, no one's just getting games anymore. Now there's selection pressure and we've got the squad to a point where it's performance time, and Richmond are definitely not there yet.
No, hopefully those kids can come on, because I think they're going to lose a couple of those senior players as well in the next few years. So they've just got to work out what they're doing as they move through. I did get a little scoop today too. I was were there early, and I Mick Malthouse, I sort of lost him on the way in. We went through the festival park on the way to the box. And then I walked out to go get a coffee pregame. And Mick was there talking to Adam Kingsley.
Okay.
And as I walked past, all I heard was Adam Kingsley say, "What are you seeing?"
Okay.
So he was seeking advice from the godfather of coaching, the coaching games record holder, Mick Malthouse. I asked him what he told him, and Mick wouldn't give very much away. Kept his confidence, but they still seek advice out of Michael. So there we go.
I like that.
Yeah, so do I.
I
like the humility.
Yeah, and if you're going to listen to anyone in the game, you may as well listen to someone who's been in the game a long time.
Yeah, I think we see it with Craig McRae a lot now as well. Like he spoke about recently, Scott Pendlebury gave a mid-forward connection masterclass in front of the whole group. And the way Craig spoke about it was with such awe. And I feel like that's modern coaching. The modern coach doesn't have to have all the answers. It's not 1990 anymore. A little bit of humility goes a long way, which I just want to say on the way out, thanks to Daniel Harford for Lauren Arnell's premiership medal. Sacked from Carlton, went to Brisbane, won the flag. You beauty.
Look, we really didn't That wasn't where we were going with this podcast, but it's been fun.
No,
thanks,
that's we were just. If Half's not going to show up, he's going to cop a clip on the way through. Lauren Arnell, great work from you in the game and also on the podcast. Thanks for jumping on.
No, I appreciate it. It's been fun.
This has been ABC AFL Daily. Gather round, done, dusted, finito. 270,000 fans through the gates.